Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackwitz. Hey Bob, how you doing?
Matthew, I'm doing great today.
Nice.
I feel good.
Yeah?
I don't know why.
Uh-huh.
But I do.
Well, you got a lovely wife, a lovely daughter. You know, your folks are great. Christmas is around the corner. You're wearing a suit and tie. You know, you got a button of some sort on there that looks like a kid's bird drawing button. What's going on?
Well, what's going on with the button?
Yeah, so
with
the button.
Suit or in general? Well, the button.
Okay, let's go button first, okay. Then suit.
So I'm wearing a jacket and tie.
Yeah.
But that's mostly because it's past 6 o'clock. What am I, a farmer?
Nice. No,
some
job,
days
Jack.
I just like to dress up to remind myself that I am a functioning adult.
Yeah. Okay.
When you work for yourself, you spend a lot of times in a robe because you're at home and there's no reason to get dressed up.
Right.
And if you do that too many days in a row, you start
then you
to
become
get,
the robe.
You get robe brain.
Yeah.
Right. And so just to shake it up, I'll put on a jacket and a tie when I go out.
That is such a smart idea. Like, yeah, because if you're just in your home, I think it just, I don't know, you devolve.
You devolve.
Yeah.
Well, robe brain is kind of like a robe. It's fuzzy and warm and comfortable and you're not in a big hurry to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's no sharp edges. Everything's just rounded. Right. You know, your day's rounded.
Right. That's exactly it.
I'll get to it. I get to it. You know, I haven't had in a while. Hot chocolate. I'm going to make myself a cocoa right now.
When you work for yourself,
yeah,
the meal quality goes up,
yeah,
but the productivity goes down.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. That's a great answer.
And then the button is just to remind everybody that, you know, I'm not Gordon Gekko.
Yeah.
I may be wearing a jacket and a tie, but I'm still that lovable indie guy you've always known.
I don't think I'd mind being Gordon Gekko. Just, you know, being on my sand buggy with Daryl Hannah, watching the sunrise. You know, like it's not a bad. I mean,
watching your mistress go off with somebody else and thinking it's cute because as soon as you decide to end it, you will.
That is power.
That's a power move.
Oh, you want to be with Bud Fox? Knock yourself out.
Sure, go have some fun.
Yeah.
Bud's a good kid. Then I'll come get you when you're done.
I'll see
you
at the end of
fall. Picking up someone after a play date.
Yeah. That is good. That is a good point.
Between that and the suspenders and the slicked back hair,
yeah,
he had a lot of power moves.
We're
talking about Michael Douglas's character in Wall Street.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, Google it.
Google it. Go see it. It's fantastic.
It's one of Oliver Stone's best moments.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He's in one of the boxes during the trading scene.
He was on a heater for a while.
He
was. Platoon, Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
He did Natural Born Killers, which is a weird movie.
It's ambitious.
It's ambitious.
Yeah. You know, JFK, there's a lot of good you can say about that. You know, he had a good run. He had a hell of a run.
Yeah.
So we'll get to, I got a lot of NFL. I mean, we'll go to
Leafs. Tons of stuff. Leafs, Raptors.
Raptors lose again against a quality opponent. But first,
I got a fun top five.
Yeah.
So stick around for this. It was brought on by my realization that I love olives.
Mm-hmm.
And because I eat so little these days.
Yeah.
In terms of variety,
that
I find myself stealing olives because there's nothing else to steal. You know, when you go into the cupboard and you might grab some peanut brittle or a bag of chips or whatever, like I can't take anything. So the only thing left is we've got this package of olives and I keep sneaking back into the fridge and taking a few more each time. And so by the end of the evening, I've eaten about 20 olives.
And you haven't even had the martini. Yeah, no, just the olives.
Right, just the
just
olives.
The olives.
So I wanted to do non-traditional snack foods.
Okay.
Because I realized my only snack food left is olives.
Now, let me tell you the difference between your life and mine.
The one.
The only one is you're sneaking olives, and Amy and I, we do little mini gifts every day for each other. We do our own little advent calendar for each of us. And she got me a thing of Laura Secord chocolate chips. Because I would always steal her chocolate chips as a snack. And then she also bought some ice cream home. And she just looked at me and say, if you touch this ice cream, like, because if I see it eventually at some point, I'm going to do the trick where I put it in a coffee mug so it doesn't feel like I'm really having ice cream. And then I have a second mug of it. And then a week later, it's gone.
Do you have to do 24 little gifts leading up to Christmas?
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure.
I'm good at it.
Can you do gift cards?
Yeah, if you don't love the other person, you could do gift cards.
24 is a lot.
Actually, no, you can do like a little like I'll do a $10 one for Dollarama. But before sports, you were Santa. Tell us about the Santa experience.
I was Santa at the St. Vincent de Paul Christmas Jubilee this past Saturday.
Yep.
And you know what I've noticed? That boys turn mean right around 8 years old.
Yeah, they do.
Like the boys who are like, say, about 6, maybe 7 years old and younger, they're game. Yeah. They're going with it. Like even if they're not convinced you're the real Santa, they're having fun.
Yeah.
But around 8, their purpose in life is to make Santa unhappy.
Oh, yeah. They're accusing you. They're
you're
pulling
not the
your
real
beard.
Santa.
Yeah.
How come I can see? How come you have brown hair underneath it? I want to say, look, kid, trust me. Yeah. It isn't brown.
Yeah.
It's all gray all the way.
I'm going to swear now. if I was here, it's like, hey, what are you, motherfucking Inspector Clouseau? This is not the motherfucking murder. You know, we're not a murder on the Nile here or the Orient Express. It's not death on the Nile. Yeah, no shit, I'm not Santa.
Hey, Columbo, I'm wearing Air Jordans.
Yeah, exactly. Come on.
That came up a lot. I wore my Air Jordans. Santa, why are you wearing basketball shoes? My answer was always, well, because Santa loves the Raptors.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that'd be good enough.
No. Yeah, these 8-year olds.
So I was, and my wife agreed to play Mrs. Claus, and we had a little room for ourselves, the Santa Experience room.
Oh, yeah.
And some of her friends showed up, so she takes off for like 20 minutes. And at that moment, the boys come rolling in.
Oh, no.
It was like
you were on your own.
Jimbo and Carney and all the kids from The Simpsons come rolling in. And I'm alone, and I can't break character.
No.
And they're climbing all over the furniture, and they're like, read a story, Santa. And I'm reading The Grinch, and they're like, this is stupid. And they're like attacking me. I'm under total siege, and Mrs. Claus is off with her pals getting herself a coffee.
Ah. Stupid Mrs. Claus.
Yeah, so I walked back in.
Yeah.
And then now I can't be mad at my wife in front of the children.
No.
But I got to try to communicate to her as Santa.
Yeah.
What are you doing hanging me out to dry this way?
Yeah, it's like, listen, I'm going to let you hang out with the reindeer if you leave me again like this.
She was with her friends. I'm being passive aggressive with her. Yeah. And our friend Tony says, wow, Santa's got a lot of rage issues.
Santa's got some issues. Rightfully so.
All right. So anyway, no kid pissed on me, so that was good.
There you go. You're
I almost thought it happened.
Dry lap.
That's what it is. Yeah. All right. So let's get some sports. Playing Santa was fun, but then we had a lot to talk about here.
Okay. I want to go a little different because usually we go like heavy Leafs and stuff like that. And we'll get the Leafs. Hey, they beat St. Louis. Fantastic. I'm going to do something tonight that I don't normally do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a dumb sports fan.
Oh.
And by the way, I shouldn't say dumb. That's condescending. What I mean is I'm going to put away big picture thoughts. Because the New York Giants have 2 wins. There's a lot of teams in the NFL with 3 wins.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stay at 2 wins, the chances of you getting a top 2 or 3 draft pick are damn good. But if they win again, now they're with a giant group of 3-win teams. So they could go from number 2 to like drafting 7th. That could be a big deal for a big picture franchise. But Eli Manning gets to play tonight, Monday night, against Philadelphia in the Eagles. And Philadelphia, against the Eagles. And the NFC East is so bad, the Eagles can still win that division, as shocking as it is. So technically, I should want the Giants to lose. They got nothing to play for. Go get a draft pick. I want them to win. I want Eli, who's 161 and 161, I want him to go out with a winning record. I want him 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. I want one final Eli Manning moment. I get to relive 2 Super Bowl runs and just enjoy the hell out of my team and not think about, well, this will mean we won't be able to get the Ohio State pass rusher unless we give up a future first-round pick and a 3rd to move up 4 spots in the draft. Bleep all that. I don't care about long-term. For one night, I want some short-term sports num-nums.
That is a great take and a real conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
So is Eli going to get the starts for the rest of the year?
Well, he's getting this one because Daniel Jones has an
he's
ankle
hurt,
sprain.
Right?
Yeah.
But an ankle sprain can be tricky.
Yeah.
Do you think that Eli's going to get the starts for the rest of the year? Is this the last chance?
It could be. It's like going to see a Stones concert with seeing Steel Wheels. It might have been the last concert.
Maybe they're
going
to get Eli Manning to go out and do the dancing like Mick did after his heart attack to show everybody, no, come to the show. I can still dance.
But after Steel
did
Wheels.
Did you see that video?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he was bopping.
That video... excuse me, shamed a lot of 75-year-olds. But after
shamed a lot of 45-year-olds.
Exactly. So I am going to be rooting for a Giants win draft order be damned.
I think you're doing the right thing. Because it's weird if he goes out with a losing record. It's not just like the last game and the last hurrah.
Yeah.
There's actually something practical at stake here. Can you, forgive my ignorance, but are there any quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame with losing records?
Yep. I believe Joe Namath has a losing record.
Okay. So there is a precedent.
Yeah, there is. Namath would. I bet you go back to some of the guys, you know, in the 60s and 70s. I bet there are some that are out there.
Because your record is a... It's a somewhat inaccurate representation of you as a player. It's a team sport.
Yeah, and QB wins. If you want to get the analytics community angry, cite QB wins as a statistic about how good a quarterback is. They get angry.
But at least symbolically, you want to finish your career north of 500.
You really do. Yeah, I do. So, tonight I'm just...
And it's against Philly.
It's against Philly. It's all the makings. And so, just for one night, I'm just, because, you know.
The funny thing, though, you're 100% right. Sorry to interrupt you, but you make a great point about the difference between picking second and picking seventh.
It's huge.
You see that in the NFL every year.
Yeah.
And there's a few super studs, and then there's really good players.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's no draft lottery. If the Giants finish at 2-14, then it's them and the Bengals, I think, fighting it for the number one overall pick.
The Bengals have one win, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And so, you know, if you do that, and also, if teams want a quarterback, the Giants don't need a quarterback this year.
Right.
They're in that sort of catbird seat where they could do all these great things. But if you win...
Yeah, they could actually trade it. You're right. And then maybe pick up a couple...
Yeah. Couple second-round picks. It's a great spot to be for the future.
Right.
But tonight, it's just nachos, and I want my team. I want my team to win because I haven't been... Like, I know they've been bad, so it's hard to root for them to win when you because you get the draft in your head, so...
It's a great point, and I'm pulling for the Giants tonight. Yeah. Ordinarily, I'd pull for Philly because I think I'd rather see Philly beat Dallas to get in.
It'd be hilarious. In the East. Yeah.
Well, it's just Jerry Jones will implode.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the Jason Garrett, Jerry Jones story will never be funnier than if Philadelphia wins the East.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it won't be funny for long because they'll just fire him. But you know there'll be some winner of a clip. You'll be able to play it forever.
Oh, God, yeah. To me, the funny thing is, players, and we've seen players and coaches hang up on radio interviews all the time. The only person who doesn't hang up in an interview is Jerry Jones. He gets angry at the interviewer. He gets indignant, and there's great sound out there. But you know what he doesn't do? He doesn't hang up because he loves the attention. He craves and needs the attention. So every Dallas loss, the radio personalities at Dallas are getting more brazen by just going, "So, Jerry, how embarrassed are you right now?" But Jerry never hangs up the phone. So, Dallas losing is it's good for everyone.
Okay. Well, do you want to talk a little NFL since we're already doing it?
Let's do it.
Look, I don't pretend to be an NFL expert.
Mm-hmm.
I watch where I can, but I just find that with my concentration on the Leafs and the Raptors, I just don't have time to follow the NFL closely.
Things to do.
I'll catch most of a Bills game because I follow the Bills as best as I can. It was a good game yesterday, actually. It wasn't a good game. It was an exciting finish.
It was an exciting finish with Josh Allen having three straight incompletions in the red zone.
Really, really hurt.
By the way,
but there were some drops during the course of the game that did hurt them.
There was, absolutely. But I feel bad for Bills fans because that one did feel like, oh, see, that's Josh Allen. There he is. And you're gonna lose some bandwagon people.
Outstanding defense.
Yeah.
Decent offense.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's who they are. And their record kind of shows that. Mm-hmm. That's the record of a team that has great D and okay offense.
Yeah.
I want to play a game with you then. I want to play rank them if that's okay.
Do it.
Just basically, I throw you some options and then you, I'm going to find this on my phone here. Okay. And you just rank them in order. Okay.
Sure.
Team most likely at this point, from this point on, to win multiple Super Bowls. The Chiefs, the Niners, or the Ravens?
Chiefs, Niners, Ravens.
That's the order?
No. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Of those three.
And just to recap, Chiefs beat the Pats yesterday. Niners, huge win over the Saints. I don't really, I felt like the Saints kind of got jobbed.
But. Oh, I'm most impressed with the 49ers. The last 3 weeks, they beat up by over 30 Aaron Rodgers. They barely lost to the Ravens in Baltimore on a 49-yard field goal, and then they beat the Saints. That was a hell of a game. Yeah. But here's my answer: who's going to win multiple Super Bowls
from this point on?
I'm going to go Ravens first, Chiefs second, 49ers third.
And really?
Here's why.
Interesting.
Because part of this is based on geography. The Ravens are now with the Browns, the Steelers, the Bengals. That's a horrible division. Mm-hmm. The Chiefs, the Broncos, the Los Angeles Chargers, and the Raiders. Horrible division. So it's going to be easier paths for those teams. San Fran, you've got Seattle, Green Bay. You're going to at least breeze for at least one more year after this year. I think it's going to be a harder route to go through the NFC because the Patriots are about to go away. Mm-hmm.
This was my way to backdoor the Patriots conversation.
The Patriots.
I didn't want to ask the dynasty question.
Yeah, the Patriots, they are slipping. They're falling, and it's a realistic conversation to have because Brady's 42. I'm sorry. Right. And this is not a knee-jerky sort of thing. Even last year, the Patriots' offense wasn't that good. They could run the ball. That was about it.
And then you subtract Gronk.
And then you subtract Gronk. Goodbye.
And a variety of wide receivers who were supposed to be the answer this year.
And none of them have been. They've done a bad job there. So I'm going to go with those three. I'm going to go in that order. And then it's really between John Harbaugh versus Andy Reid. I'll give Harbaugh the slight edge. And I'll give Lamar Jackson the Patrick Mahomes is making a lot of dumb throws this year. Lamar Jackson is still not there. As my only concern with Lamar Jackson is, does he get hit in the bad way?
Right.
Because he runs the ball a lot.
RG3 was going to be the future of football until he wasn't.
And thankfully, we've now had lessons that can be learned from that. And Harbaugh's a smart coach.
They do run him a lot.
They do run him a lot.
He's good at it.
He's really good at it.
He's really good at it. Actually, I thought the Bills did a good job of limiting him. And you could see how important Mark Ingram is to that team.
Yeah.
Because the fact you can switch it up to a guy who's quite a good runner just for change of pace.
Yeah. I'll give a slight edge. So, I'll stick with Ravens, Chiefs, and then 49ers. But it is close. And by the way, the funny thing is about that Saints and 49ers game, the game was like 49, 48, whatever the score was.
It was 48-46, I think.
The best player on the field was a defensive player. Joey Bosa is so good.
So good.
And this
the Bosas in general.
Oh, my God, was he good in that game. Anyway, so that's how I rank him.
Okay, which bad year is most likely an anomaly?
Okay.
Baker Mayfield, the Philadelphia Eagles, Ron Rivera. Just to go over, Baker Mayfield, quarterback of the Browns, not a particularly good year and a disappointing year for the team. The Philadelphia Eagles, I think, sit currently at 5-7.
Yeah.
They could still win the East, but that's one of the worst divisions historically in football history.
It is.
And then Ron Rivera just fired from the Carolina Panthers. But Jay Glazer on Fox yesterday talking about how he could get snapped up and be coaching as early again as next year.
He will be. Ron Rivera will be snapped up.
All right. So bad year is an anomaly. Rank them. Baker, Eagles, Ron Rivera.
I'm going to go with Ron first, Eagles second, Baker third.
You're not down with Baker, eh?
Well, listen, Baker still has a chance. And listen, when you've got the horrible coaches he's had the first 2 years, that's hard. Like, that's legitimately really hard. My concern with Baker Mayfield was even when we were all loving him last year, he was still only beating the bad teams. So that's why I'm going to put him third. The Eagles have no skill position whatsoever. I am a Carson Wentz fan, but they have no skill position, and their corners are horrible. But I'll still rank them just ahead of Baker. And you know, Ron Rivera, you know, Cam Newton beat up. Cam Newton, it goes as far as the quarterback. So I'll go with that, and mostly because Ron will have a job next year.
All right, so final one of the Rank'em NFL series is team most likely to get in the AFC. It feels like the NFC is kind of...
We know what's happening.
Yeah, we know what's happening. But there are some legitimate questions in the AFC, particularly after yesterday. So Rank'em, Titans, Bills, Texans.
Oh, Titans. Titans are getting in.
You think so?
Yeah.
They're just on a heater right now.
Yeah. Like Derrick Henry, is his last 17 games is really good. Tannehill, healthy Tannehill he's a good quarterback, not a great quarterback.
The Tannessons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's happening because he's not in Miami anymore. So the Bills, Bills are making the – I think the Bills are still going to make – they're going to take over their schedule. But no, I'm going to put the Titans for sure because no one in that AFC South, they all lose.
Deshaun.
Yeah.
Right? Deshaun versus Josh Allen.
By the way, Texans, how do you lose to Denver by that score?
Big score, too.
Oh, my God.
That was a killer.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk – you want to talk Raptors or Leafs now? Or do you want to do some Jeff Pollock love?
You know, it's not Jeff Pollock. Well, it is Jeff Pollock love. It's – more than love.
What should I get him for Christmas? Do you think I should get him a phone call?
I think, give him the gift of time. I think that's the real
Jeff,
gift.
For Christmas, I phoned you back.
Yeah, that's a hell of a gift. Jeff Pollock, I'm sure most people know this, but if you're new to the podcast, Jeff Pollock is our lawyer, the title sponsor on this podcast, and it's really quite simple. At some point, you're going to need legal help, legal advice, and why not go to someone who's A, really good at his job, really accomplished, but B, a nice guy, you know, like that to me is the ultimate 1-2 punch. He's good and he's nice. And you can easily get a hold of him, 416-777-0088, 416-777-0088, jeffpollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. He wins awards and he's part of like these like high-end legal barrister societies. I don't know how it works, but apparently it's very difficult to get in. So he's really accomplished. He's a fantastic guy, and he deals with Bob and Bob's flaky schedule. So Jeff Pollock is the way to go.
If I hadn't have gone the route of show business, I probably would have been a lawyer. And sometimes I wish I had been a lawyer.
Oh, my God, that'd be great.
One, you argue a lot.
Yep.
Which would be nice.
Yep.
Two, you try to convince everybody you're right and they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Check mark there, too.
Yep.
But I also wish I could join secret societies.
Oh, my God.
Like, as a writer, you don't join a lot of secret societies. Maybe you do.
I would.
Maybe if you're better, you do. But anyway, just like the idea of the legal guild of blah, blah, blah. Like, I could be at the National Club.
Ah, let me tell here's my favorite little secret society thing, and it's about wine. Shocking. There is a place called, and I forget, the Fine Wine Reserve, the Fine Wine Institute. And it's right around King and like...
It's called the Fine Wine Institute?
Fine Wine Reserve. Yeah, no, it's the Reserve. Institute, that sounds like a school.
It's like DeVry.
And here's the thing about it. You would never know. There's no sign outside. It's right on King. It's somewhere between Young and Bathurst.
So do you walk in and it looks like an old bookstore, and then you go to the shelf and you're like, pull on one book that's called something like Wines of Muskoka.
You're not far off. By the way, Wines of Muskoka would just be fruit wines. They don't have the temperature for Vitis veritas for proper grape growing. So here's the thing. You walk down these stairs. It's nonchalant. There's nothing there. You know what there is, though?
What?
There's something where you got to put your you got to put your thumbprint.
You got to be kidding me.
Inside.
You got to put your thumbprint on it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
Oh, yeah. And like, I've gone through their cellar. There's millions of dollars of wine. Like, we're talking about, you know, bottles of wine that are $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 a bottle. That, and I've been, I don't have any space there. I've gone, and by the way, it's just a tiny little room, like where you go to drink. It's one large table, there's a couch, and there's a sink. It's very nonchalant, and if you don't clean up after yourself, you get a warning. If you don't clean after yourself the second time, you're booted out, which I love. That is a sneaky secret society.
Okay, I got so many questions. Is there a password? Do you have to say Fidelio at the door?
There may or may not.
Okay, I guess you can't answer that, right?
I can't give it away.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Are there naked prostitutes walking around with Italian opera masks on?
There are not, unfortunately.
Okay, maybe you're just not a high enough
rank. By the way, the funny thing is, if there was like naked prostitutes wearing masks on one side, and in the other was, you know, like some old Shambu Musini, even if I'm single, I'm going to the Shambu Musini first before I'm going to the hookers.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. And Amy will be happy to hear that.
Yeah, she will.
Do you murder people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, murder some bottles of wine. Ow! Let me tell you something. We took down that third growth. All right. Where in sports you on?
Were we talking, Jeff? Did we finish talking,
Jeff? Yeah,
Jeff
okay. Pollock.
Do you want to talk Raptors or Leafs? I got some hot takes both ways.
You know what? You're the one with the notes, and you didn't have to wake up as early. You know, visitor's choice. I can go either way.
Okay, let's talk Leafs then.
Sure.
They win against St. Louis. It's nice that they won. I think that one game doesn't tell you much.
No.
But it's better to... Everybody felt better about it because if they would have lost, I think it would have been ugly.
This is a young team. This is a fragile team. This is a team that needs a confidence boost. And this team needs a constant pat on the back. There you go.
Right. Okay. So here's my hot take.
Yeah.
Matthews is the most talented player on the Leafs, but Tavares is the real first center. And we forget sometimes that the most important player on the Leafs is not Austin Matthews. It's actually John Tavares.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, a guy, the potential that we saw many goals he scored last year, and a guy
he can score 40 goals.
Yeah.
He back checks.
Yeah.
He makes Marner great. If Marner's going to get 80 to 90 points, it's because he's on a line with Tavares.
Yep.
And he makes him look good. Not that Marner's not good. He obviously is extremely talented, but as you've often said, Tavares is the forward whisperer.
Yeah.
Oh, he
yeah.
just makes his line mates look great.
Only in Toronto can John Tavares get lost.
Right.
You know, like here's a guy at the peak of his powers who can get you 40 plus goals, multiple All-Star gold medal, like all these things. And yet because of the drama, because of Babcock, because of contracts, and we focus a lot on the young players and their growth and what's going on with Morgan Riley and why does Tyson Barrie not score, we forget that John Tavares is, and I mean part of it, he was injured part of the year, but yeah, Tavares kind of gets lost.
Right. So let's think about his year. He gets named captain under some really weird circumstances because there's the Matthews Arizona case,
yep.
and it just feels like they just gave it to the grown-up in the room, but it wasn't an ascension.
Yeah,
they held out this empty captain vacancy for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And finally they give it to Tavares and it was sort of like a, I mean, they kind of even just announced it at the last minute and then quickly buried it.
But think, yeah. Oh yeah. It slight tangent, but this is about Tavares and the captaincy.
Okay.
Go. If you go back and watch the video that the Leafs put out when he got named captain, if you remember it, they told his wife and their newborn baby, and they did the little Tavares jersey with a C on it and put it on their baby.
Mm-hmm.
And in the room, there was Shanahan and Dubas and Babcock, and they're all smiling, and they're all getting along, and they're with the baby, and they're bonding over it because, you know, all these people have had children in different phases, and then Tavares comes in, and everything is warm and happy and loving, and everyone is on the same page. That vid, and we know the whole time in that video, Dubas was. You know what Dubas did right afterwards? He went out and he cheated with Sheldon Keefe. Him and Keefe got together and they talked about what they were going to do with Riley and Barrie after Babcock got fired. Like that video is nuts. It's like at the end of Godfather 2, you know, where they're all getting along before he comes into the room. Like that video is, there's so much about that video you could laugh at.
I love that. I would also argue that they made a bigger deal out of Kadri's return when Colorado played here on Saturday night, a couple Saturdays back.
Yeah.
Was it? Anyway. Then they did when John Tavares got the captaincy.
Yeah.
Imagine if Kawhi had stayed.
Oh.
And what the video tribute to Kawhi would have looked like.
Yeah.
It feels like they just don't know how to talk about Tavares. He was the first free agent in a really long time in the whole NHL.
Yeah.
That left his team to go somewhere else.
Yep.
An $11 million man took a kind of, not a haircut, obviously, but he could have gotten more money somewhere else, or he could have stayed with the team where he'd originally been. It was a huge deal.
Yeah.
He had an enormous year last year. Just a freaking great year. Slow start this year. And I honestly think that when Tavares picks it back up, and let's just assume he does, there's been health stuff, he just had a baby.
Yeah.
But when he gets into a groove, and he and Marner get into a groove, I think the Leafs are going to look a hell of a lot better. And maybe we should stop focusing a little less obsessively on how much back-checking Austin Matthews does from shift to shift, and just think about the captain and what the captain's going to do for this team.
It's a good point. I think you'd enjoy the Leafs season more if you focus more, especially when Tavares, because the heater's going to happen. Here's a question for you. Do you think at some point, the final days of Babcock, or, you know, after they lose 6-4 to Buffalo and then they lose to Colorado, I think Tavares, you know, gives a little side-eyed glance to the Islanders who won a playoff round last year, who have a much better record than Leafs do this year. Do you think at all he regrets it, or it's about the entirety of being wanting to be back in this area?
I think that's complicated.
Yeah, I have no answer to it. I was wondering about that the other day.
I feel like we all feel that the Islanders somehow shouldn't be doing what they're doing.
It's so unfair, but it's true.
Right?
Yeah.
And we just keep waiting for that to be proven false.
Yeah.
It hasn't yet.
Yeah.
In fact, if anything, the Leafs have been proven false. Last year just feels like they got really hot, at least for half the year, and that carried them. It was a bit of an anomaly. I got to thinking about Matthews and Tavares, and it occurred to me, like, we keep waiting for Matthews to be the next Sidney Crosby or as good as Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
And he has that talent level, but maybe we're thinking of him the wrong way. Let me toss this out to you. What if we just allowed Austin Matthews to be Evgeny Malkin?
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I mean by that. When you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are multiple cup winners,
yeah.
who would you say is the greatest player on that team?
Crosby.
Right. Is it close?
It's not close. It's not a massive gap, but it's a clear answer.
See, it's interesting, right? Because Malkin is one of the greatest players of our generation.
Yep.
He is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And even when Crosby's out, you can see, like, he takes over the team.
Yeah.
He is an utterly dominant alpha player in this league. But we don't talk about him mm-hmm. as much as we talk about Crosby. And the talent level between the two isn't that big. And maybe that's how we need to start seeing Austin Matthews in this market. Maybe we can't because we're so driven by media narratives. But maybe the truth is Tavares fits better as our Crosby and Matthews fits better as our Malkin. And you still have a 1-2 punch of guys who are top five centers in the league.
I'm totally good
with
that.
At their best.
I'm totally good with that as long as Matthews plays like Malkin.
Right.
Like you said in your answer there, Crosby goes out and then Malkin steps up and just dominates. Tavares went out early this year and Matthews didn't dominate. And I know people will look at his points and goals and stuff like that, but you know, he didn't and he'd admit it. And everyone like and it's not a hater thing. It's just, you know, it's
the We are very the same focused level. On his effort.
Yeah.
We focus almost obsessively on his effort.
Now, do we do that because we're nutty fans and there's a lot of media in Toronto, probably to an extent.
Yeah, I think for sure.
Or do we do it because the effort isn't there? Like, if he was giving crazy effort, we wouldn't be focused on that as much. He gave us a reason to focus on it, and maybe from time to time we overly focus. He, though, first had to open that door.
I think that what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I think that if... Because Matthews is getting paid so much,
mm-hmm.
because he was the number one pick,
yep.
because he was the guy who was supposed to be brought in like a LeBron character,
yeah.
coming to town to save the franchise.
Yeah.
Tavares never had that expectation. If they had never drafted Austin Matthews, what if that year they had just managed to fall in the draft lottery and
yeah.
they picked up a really good player but not a generational one?
Mm-hmm.
Then Tavares would be seen as the savior.
Yes.
But he's not.
He's not.
Because the other guy has been built up that way.
Yeah.
First draft pick, everybody wanted him. Best oh, yeah. player in the world, his age. Could be top 3-4 player in the league. Maybe he's not. But if he's a top 10-12 player in the league.
Pretty damn good.
That's good.
Yeah. The problem is that we know salaries and there's a salary cap. And what we need to have happen is a bunch of other players to, you know, overtake him. You know, it's like, you know, like when there was that week when Matt Ryan was the highest paid quarterback and everyone freaked out. It's like, don't worry. Eventually, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, they got their money.
Right.
And then we kind of need that. And then the worst part is that Colorado game, because we didn't do a pod last week, that Colorado game last Wednesday.
That was a Wednesday game.
Yeah, thank Wednesday you. Game. Right. It wasn't Nathan MacKinnon scoring a power play goal that got us riled up. It's the quotes afterwards when he said, I'm going to take less money in my next deal because I want to win with this group of guys. That was the hot poker in the eye. And you know what Nathan MacKinnon did? He said to Brad Marchand, beat it. I'm now the number one troll job of Leaf fans. Because that one statement is a bigger troll job to Leaf fans and Kyle Dubas than anything Brad Marchand has ever said.
All right. Neither you nor I can verify this theory.
Yeah.
But do you think, as I do, that one of the reasons players are doing this is because they hate the Leafs?
Oh, yeah. Or at the very least, I think they hate the Leafs, they hate the attention, and they also know, we no way to verify, I'm sure Nathan MacKinnon didn't, but I hope he did. But he knows you throw out that one sentence, and it's just going to light a fuse.
It really does.
Like, I saw that quote, and I was at my desk at work, and I just was like, mother bleeper. Oh my God. Like I just, and then I like, you know what I compared Kyle Dubas to? Kyle Dubas is Ebenezer Scrooge.
Okay.
At the end of A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
He is opening the door and he's throwing money to the street urchins.
What a lovely boy. Wonderful boy. Fantastic boy.
Yeah. And then the largest Christmas goose, you know? And then, like, I feel like that's Dubas. It's like Nathan MacKinnon goes, $8 million. And Dubas is like, 11. And MacKinnon's like, I don't think you know how negotiations work. And Dubas goes, $12 million, because he's filled with the spirit of Christmas. Like Lou Lamoriello. He's Ebenezer Scrooge hanging out with Jacob Marley talking at the doorstop. You know, Kyle Dubas is this one. Like, these were all the thoughts that went through my head when I heard the Nathan MacKinnon quote. I was like, ah!
Lou Lamoriello is like, two lumps of coal for the fire, Mr. Cratchit.
Yeah, yeah. Lou Lamoriello is taking the money on the eyeballs of Jacob Marley and putting them in his pocket.
Okay, so I can't stop reading articles about the Leafs and their cap situation and how they can't fix their backup goaltending. Nope. Because they don't have the money to do it.
They don't have the money.
Okay. And then everybody points to, okay, well, Dubas got hosed on the Marner deal. You could argue that he got hosed on the Nylander deal. I don't think that's true.
And the Matthews deal.
Okay, but hang on. Nylander's going to be 60 points again this year. He's a good player.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's an egregious contract.
It won't be 2 years from now.
You know, but even now, if he winds up with 60 points, like, that's a good year, and it's a good salary for a good year. Could they have shaved a couple $100,000 off it?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Matthews is, you know, maybe term even more so than the cash amount is an issue. But the Marner one, he got hosed. He got hosed on the Marner deal. And I'm sure they thought in their brain they were never going to get soaked for as much as they did.
Mm-hmm.
But let's put ourselves in Kyle Dubas's shoes.
Okay.
Weighed against the Nylander deal and the awful process where it went down to the last day of the year for him even to dress. What happens if Marner's not in camp?
I know. It's
like, how nuts does this whole, and they think that this is a year where they can legitimately win. Well, clearly last year, Nylander not being there derailed Nylander's year. Could Dubas afford $1 million risk on the cap? Like, what's more important to him? A really great backup or another shit show with Mitch Marner?
It's a fair point. Now,
did he make a bad deal? Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes you have to look at the entirety of a, you know, like, it's a business deal, but it doesn't exist in a vacuum. You're not just doing math.
Okay. Pushbacks to this.
Okay.
First off, this was a gamble. And it's a gamble that has failed because the backup goaltender situation hasn't worked and they've got no other choice. You know, they gambled that the backup goalie would be good and we're going to be healthy, because that's the only way it works when you spend right to the cap. But what I'm about to say, I don't have answers for, but do other teams, have they, and part of this is the Leafs just got Matthews, Marner, Nylander all at the same time. That's really the biggest burden for Nylander or for Dubas. It was that three guys, all very talented, all around the same age, all in the same sort of contract cycle all at once. But in Colorado, you know, the Rantanen deal wasn't as crazy as any of the Leaf deals. In Tampa, Brayden Point, you know, like those deals. Like, I look at every other NHL team and they're filled with contracts where you go, oh, that's a good deal. I look at Toronto and I see guys that, rightfully so, got the max amount pretty much that they could every time. And I just wonder, why is it so different in Toronto versus ever else in the NHL?
Okay, so I think there's a couple answers. One is because of the insanity and the circus that ensues if these players don't get signed in camp.
Even Winnipeg figured it out.
Right? Well, you know, Winnipeg's a tougher market, though. I mean, tough in the sense of more hard-nosed, right? Like, they've stuck to their guns financially a bunch of times. And in Toronto, one is, I think the Nylander thing made them afraid to go down that road again for a variety of reasons. And the other one is the philosophy of the general manager is, just get me my stars.
Yep.
He's a bit of a Daryl Morey that way with the Houston Rockets. Just, if you get me the right stars, I can put the pieces around them that will make a winning team. But it's not about the pieces. They're easy to find. It's the stars. And I think what he realized this year was there's some key pieces that they just couldn't get. If they have a decent backup and they pick up an extra 3-4 points from that backup, are we as panicked this year?
We're not as panicked.
Not as panicked.
We're not as panicked. It's just, I think part of it, and it's something I've been really, you know, thinking about, is the idea of the word talent.
Okay. Okay.
Because the things that Matthews and Marner and Nylander can do, there's a small group that can, there's only a small group of people can do it. So that is absolutely talent. But then there's other forms of it. There's when you get scored on, you don't get down for a period. Like, remember when Jason Spezza set that pick on Morgan Riley last week? I'm trying to remember. And then it led to the breakaway goal. I think it was Philadelphia. And then, you know, the Leafs. Oh, no, it wasn't Philadelphia. I forget who it was. That might have been the Colorado game. I think that was the Colorado game. And the Leafs, you know, they were just so down after that. Or the Philadelphia game where Philly won 6-1. And Travis Dermott tied it 1-1 in the third with like 11 minutes to go. The Leafs didn't have another shot on net. Well, there's talents that the Leafs don't have. The stopping of the cycle, the playing good defense, the don't do the dumb pass. You know, like, these aren't as flashy forms of talent, but that is a skill that the Leafs don't possess.
It's a great point. And I think this is what Kyle Dubas, as Alex Anthopoulos, eventually had to learn. Alex Anthopoulos, do you remember the 2012 deal? And he was just like, I need as much talent as
Josh Johnson, Burley,
Jose Reyes.
Yeah, all the guys that Marlins
did. He was like, we are going to just shoot for the moon and bring in all the talent we could. And that thing imploded.
Yeah.
And imploded for a lot of reasons. But what was interesting about that was a couple of years later, he said, here's what I learned, mm-hmm. was that it's not just about the best players.
Yeah.
You've got to get guys who are winners. And maybe Dubas has to learn that too. I'm sure Dubas has an enormous ego.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's achieved as much as he has.
At such a young age.
At such a young age. He's clearly very intelligent,
yeah.
extremely hardworking. And he's had the guts to look Lou Lamoriello, a multiple cup winner, in the eye and go toe-to-toe with him.
Yep.
Like, he's got to be confident.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he believes this is the right way to do things. He might be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
If he's wrong, and it looks like it's trending in that direction, does he have the ability to pivot?
Yeah, he's going to have to.
He's going to have to, which means you're going to have to blow up a little bit of this thing that you staked your career on.
And we all
which
know
is going to be a tough spot to be in.
It is, and we all know where it is. It's funny. All analysts, they dance around it. You know why they dance around it? Because of social media. Because when they say the name in a negative way, social media rises up. And the, you know,
are you talking Nylander here?
Of course, I'm talking Nylander.
Right. I'm just assuming.
Like, when people say the Leafs are going to have to make a big deal, and, you know, guys like Johnsson and Kapanen, shut the fuck up. Come on, let's put on our big boy pants. We know that if there has to be a pivot, if things go really bad, it's going to be Nylander.
Okay.
And the shame of it is that, you know, if Nylander's a damn good player, and he could be a 75 point guy. And then that deal looks super, super good.
Well, as we've said, you know, the most valuable commodity on the open market is goals.
Yep.
They're the hardest thing to come by.
They are.
Therefore, they are worth the most.
Yes.
Apparently, holding your stick to the right side, if mm-hmm. you play defense, is pretty good too.
Yeah.
It's like being a left-handed power bat in baseball.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to my little hot take from last week.
Do
or
it.
2 weeks ago. My little pensiere.
Oh, yeah.
That maybe the deal that they should make isn't for Nylander. Because I think his deal's pretty good.
Yep.
It's the Morgan Riley move.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of threw this out to my usual gang of people I talk to in the hockey world. You know, Jeffy, Jonas, you know, a bunch of other people. And they all thought it was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Varying degrees of stupid. from unlikely to, wow, horrible idea. And I started to think, okay, well, maybe I just got my head up my ass on this one.
Yeah.
Until Stephen Birch,
who
is a great follow on Twitter.
Yep.
Really smart guy, analytically driven, but also just really, I find he doesn't follow trends as much as he follows the logical puck.
Right.
So he sometimes says stuff like he's been saying the whole time, hey, gang, like the Sheldon Keefe thing, don't get too excited about it. Like, the, you know, anyway, he's good. And he pointed out that maybe Riley isn't the deal to re-sign.
Yeah.
You know, because it was inspired by all this Alex Pietrangelo talk that came out the other day. You know, Myrtle wrote a piece about should they go after him to try and fix it. And then, so, you know, people pointed out, hey, the left side of the defense isn't the issue. The right side is a shit show. You've got Barry's number coming up. Who knows what his future looks like? And you don't really have people in the pipeline ready to fix the right side. Cody Ceci clearly isn't going to be the answer. Justin Hall is serviceable, but he's a bottom pairing guy. And he's a decent bottom pairing guy. That's been nice for the team. But they don't have an answer on that right side. My point is, well, what side does Riley play? And who's more valuable to the team ultimately, him or Muzzin?
Yeah.
Depending on the numbers that both of them will be able to command moving forward. What happens to the Leafs defense if Muzzin's gone? Because he may not make great offensive decisions, but he's a good defender.
He is. And
when he doesn't have the puck, he does smart things.
And he might be more valuable because his deal would be less. And again, it's a stupid salary.
That's exactly it, right? But what if it saves you a million or two? Well, that's a million or two we've already seen they need because they're so pressed up against the cap on their high-end forwards.
So Mike Babcock always talked about looking at the Raptors. We got to learn lessons from the Raptors. And I think he was talking about the players got to work harder, got to commit, play at the highest level, be mentally smart. Maybe the way that you got to look at the Raptors is Masai Ujiri,
right,
who traded DeMar DeRozan,
right,
the longest, you know, member of the Raptors. Who's the like one of the longest standing Maple Leafs? It's Morgan Riley. Maybe you trade Morgan Riley, and that's the move that moves the needle.
Who has an enormous amount of value.
Yep.
He was in the Norris consideration.
Last year, absolutely.
But we've seen that he's a really good defenseman, offensively speaking. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Defensively, he's not great.
Yep.
And I think last year, maybe he was so good offensively, we forgave a lot.
And if you trade him now, the people are going to get upset that his value is not as high. You're not trading at the highest level.
But if it continues.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think this is going to happen at the deadline. I'm mm-hmm. more looking towards the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny that you mentioned Ujiri and DeMar, because I sent a text to Jonas Siegel.
Yeah.
And I said, don't be surprised if Riley is gone this offseason. That's what I think is going to happen. Dubas loves Masai Ujiri. And he sent back a text saying, bad player comp, right? DeMar and Riley are not comparable players. And I said, but it's not about the player. It's about the mindset of the administration that would take a guy who's so popular and still really good,
mm-hmm.
but flip him because it's asset management.
Yeah.
So that's my little pensieri there. Yeah. Is everybody's looking at Nylander. I think you're right about Kapanen and Janssen. You know, they're not going to get it done. But you could do something big getting rid of Riley. Get more balance on the back end.
Yeah. And if you want to really like pivot, you don't pivot by trading Kasperi Kapanen.
What's it going to get you?
Yeah.
Like a decent player?
Yeah. Should quickly mention before we get to the Raptors,
mm-hmm.
SeatGiant.ca. You should use them. They're
well said.
Thank you. You should use them.
I like them.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. What can Brown do for you? It's our Canadian partner on this show. Concert tickets, sporting event tickets, every sort of event in North America. Go to SeatGiant.ca. The good thing is all the tickets are in Canadian dollars. The good thing is it's a Canadian company owned and operated. The good thing is at the discount code, you type in Bob and Matt, you save some money, we get a small kickback. It's win-win. So it's good all around. SeatGiant, SeatGiant.ca. It's good.
That's one of my favorite reads you've ever done.
There you go.
I liked it. It was kind of Ernest Hemingway. It was taut and muscular.
Yeah. Okay, so we got 10 minutes.
Okay, well, let's get to the Raptors. Okay.
I want your top five alternate snack options.
Oh, okay. So, here we go. This is based on the fact that I can't eat anything, but mm-hmm. also I've been obsessed with olives lately.
Yeah.
So it got me to thinking about other delicious things that are unconventional. I'm going to start off with something called...
Are we going 5-1 or just...
5-1. 5-1.
Okay.
Biltong.
Huh?
Biltong is like beef jerky from South Africa. We've got neighbors who have South African ancestry, and we did some stuff for them, and so they repaid us in jerky.
Yeah.
And honestly, Charlotte and I sat there, and we wolfed it. Like we were Texas oil billionaires. We just plowed that. It was amazing. I'd never heard of it before, but if you ever get a chance.
What's it called again?
Biltong. Okay. B-I-L-T-O-N-G.
Okay. By the way, I do need to know at some point, we won't have time for this one, what is going on in your neighborhood where the barter system is I do something for you and you get beef jerky? Is this the 1800s?
It's Parkdale.
Okay.
Everybody's a hippie. Okay. People go to the farmer's market.
It's funny. It's hippies with million-dollar homes. All right. What's number four?
Prunes. Surprisingly tasty.
Yeah.
You can actually, if you're going to do like dried apricots or dried, fruit of some kind, prunes are actually, they just got a bad rap.
They do.
Because they became a Golden Girls mainstay joke, right?
Yeah.
Getting regular. Go have your prunes.
By the way,
they're actually good.
Still one of the smartest shows ever written, Golden Girls.
So good.
Yeah.
Wish I would have made that one. popcorn with vinegar. Have you ever put vinegar on popcorn?
No.
Jeff Merrick taught me this one when we used to live
together. Then it has to be healthy.
Yeah.
If Merrick did it.
No. It was from our early 20s. We were just really broke.
Okay.
Yeah. We would have like popcorn for dinner.
Yeah.
And he would say, wait, put some white vinegar on it. Mm. It was actually really good. Celery
mm-hmm.
with anchovies.
Good. Get the hell
I
out
learned
of
this one from my Southern Italian in-laws.
That's gross.
It's you would think so,
yeah.
But it is so good. You just like lay like in the little trough of the of the celery, you lay out an anchovy. It is so good, dude.
All right.
It is like a salt explosion in your mouth, and then the celery gives it crunch.
Yeah.
So it's texture and taste. It's so good.
Okay, I'm gonna pull back a little bit my what the hell. Because problem with the anchovies, sometimes the texture. So at the very least, you do have a good carrying into your mouth mechanism in the celery.
They work together, hand in hand. Tavares and Marner. And the last one, and I'm going to, this is just a shout out to my great, dear, departed Gigi.
Mm-hmm.
The classic Ukrainian snack food wasn't even like a snack food, but whenever you had guests over, you would put out a loaf of bread and then a bottle of hooch. And you get some garlic, salt, and kielbasa.
Yep.
Now, here's how you do it. The first thing you do is you take the garlic you rub it in the you take the garlic, you rub it in the salt.
Yep.
You crunch the whole thing at one time and shoot it down, right? And it's got a kind of a bitter but salty taste to it, right? It's strong, though. It's explosive in your mouth. Then you take the booze. A lot of people use vodka. My grandfather wasn't a vodka guy. He was a Seagram's VO whiskey guy. You shoot back the shot.
Yeah.
And then you take the bread and the kielbasa and you take a bite of that.
That sounds great.
And those three things together, honestly, kept my family going for 50 years.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
Yeah.
Also, I like some, a little bit of work. It makes you appreciate it more.
It's a process.
Yeah, it's a process.
It's not really like a snack food.
Yeah.
Per se, it's not like potato chips.
Yeah.
Although my grandfather would go through a loaf of bread and a coil of kielbasa, so.
Can you eat that, though, the bread?
I can't eat any of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can do the celery and the anchovy.
Okay, hold on. Of those five things, what can you actually eat?
I can do the biltong.
Yeah.
I can do the celery and anchovy. No, can I do the anchovies? I may be able to do that.
Yeah.
I may be able to do that.
Yeah.
That is all.
The
olives.
You can do the olives.
I can do the
delicious, delicious olives.
Right.
Pascal Siakam.
Okay.
Against the Rockets, Miami, Dallas, the Clippers, Milwaukee, and the second game against Philly, shooting around 33-32%, averaging about 17 points per game. He is in the process of, he's still in this process of learning, of being the number one guy. Some of those were without Kyle Lowry, some of them were with him. Everything for me always goes back to the development of Pascal Siakam, and this is part of the difficult learning phase for him.
The important thing to remember is that he is better now than many of the projected scenarios people had for him
going
into the season.
Yeah.
So even if he's had a dip, and even if it means he's not the guy they were talking about at an MVP level, he didn't need to be that guy this year. This is the year where he starts to take over the team. And you know what? He might be as good as Victor Oladipo. Here's what I mean by that. They play separate positions, obviously.
Yeah.
But when Oladipo went to Indy, he really took off and, you know, became the leader of the squad. And you can build a team around Victor Oladipo. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can build a championship team around him, but you can definitely build a team around him. And I feel that way about Pascal. He's not. Is he going to be Chris Bosh? Because Chris Bosh is a Hall of Famer.
Chris Bosh is a Hall of Famer. He absolutely is. I think that's the ceiling. And yeah, he could be. Just because we've seen his growth and these jumps, and we know this is a smart, hardworking fella. And on top of that, he is in a perfect environment to grow as a person and as a player. Yes, he could be Bosh.
So that's the context in which I've come to look at him.
Yeah.
If he can grow into a Bosch level talent, what a steal for Masai Ujiri that would be.
100%.
bottom of the first round.
Yep.
And to get a guy who's got Hall of Fame potential, but let's not get nuts here. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's kind of like NFL quarterbacks in this, that there are only a few real stars.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to win without one. Mm-hmm. And it's unlikely that Pascal is going to become that guy. When you look at somebody like, give me a good quarterback in the NFL, a good one.
A good quarterback in the
NFL. Someone you trust to get you a win.
Matt Ryan.
Okay. So Matt Ryan got to the Super Bowl.
He did.
Matt Ryan put up a hell of a lot of numbers for a lot of years.
Yes, he did.
Matt Ryan ultimately wasn't good enough to win a championship, was he?
Yeah. No.
Right?
Critical mistakes in that Super Bowl.
Just whatever it was, yeah. There was a line between Matt Ryan and, say, the four or five guys who would have won that game.
Yeah. And it's a shame because I think Matt Ryan, did he win the MVP? Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, but that's kind of my point is we get a little nuts in our heads. Like
we do.
There's a couple of unicorns out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like even Paul George isn't that guy. Paul George is a top 10 player, top 12 player in the league. But he's going to need a Kawhi in order to win.
There's just there is no socialism in the NBA.
No, it's so top heavy.
Yeah, it really is.
It's the Rush Limbaugh's dream.
Yeah. Ugh.
What I find interesting about this team is now we are coming up against what expectations really are. And we see this with the Leafs, too. We expected the Leafs to be much better than they are.
Yeah.
And it's been very disappointing. I feel like the Raptors are kind of exactly who we thought they would be in a good scenario.
They're still projected. Right now, they're winning at like a 54-win pace.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They're going to be a 54-plus. They're going to be a 50-plus win team. They're going to finish with probably the fourth or fifth best record in the East.
If they have 50 wins, this has been an incredible season.
And Pascal Siakam, huge leap forward.
Yep.
OG Anunoby.
Making a leap.
You know, 19-11 last night against Philly. Like, getting better all the time. Feels like a really, like, he feels like a starter.
Yeah.
And not just the guy you'd bring off the bench. Fred Van Vliet feels like this could be his team.
Yeah.
You know, that which makes Kyle Lowry tradable in the offseason. Nick Nurse, it's not a fluke.
Yeah.
It's not because Kawhi was there. He's a really good coach.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is amazing.
It is.
But we got a taste of something else.
Yeah.
And now you don't want to let it go.
No, when that West Coast swing, then they were up by 40 on Utah. Suddenly, you felt like it was last year. Suddenly, it's like, all right, nothing's changed. Wait a minute, Kawhi's not here. That's a massive, massive, massive change.
Oh, you mean they're just missing the best player in the league?
That's it. Yeah.
That's all it is?
Oh, yeah. We all need to do this. I as well, especially with the Raptors. I have my expectation management. I got to go take it in for a repair.
There are so many good stories compared to bad ones.
Yeah.
Terrence Davis, Chris Boucher.
Yeah.
Like, these guys look like they could be genuine rotation pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. He's on a one-year deal. He might be gone. But one of the great things about that is even if he leaves, guys around the league will look at Toronto and Nick Nurse and Masai and what they've built and say, well, my career's not going that good here.
If I go there, I can get that three-year, $15 million a season deal.
Right. And what happens if we would have signed Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to a two-year deal?
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, he becomes a valuable asset in the trade market the next year, right? Like, you're always about acquiring assets and trying to get bigger and plumper as you go along, right? And I think Masai's really, really good at that. Like, you could flip, if you wanted to, Chris Boucher for a second rounder. That second rounder could be partnered up with somebody else to make an attractive piece that gets you a decent three-point shooter off the bench.
Yep.
These are all things that are going to matter.
Yep. Well, Bob, we are out of time.
Clearly,
your diet does not make you bigger or plumper.
I was a skinny Santa.
Yep, you were. You were.
Oh, the kids just like, they just... I kept thinking, man, can't some nice girls walk through the door?
I know.
You know, like, they never torture you. Like, they do maybe a little, but they kind of, like, they're not climbing on the furniture. Now I understand why teachers would always get mad at the boys.
Yeah.
Because the boys take the assault to a higher level.
What you need, Bob, is the kids from Polar Express. And instead, you got the kids from The Simpsons. We're out of time. I will see you next week. Great
Jimbo,
to see you.
Jimbo, Carney.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.